Welcome to the SEI podcast series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A transcript of today's podcast is posted on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts. My name is Suzanne Miller, and today I am pleased to introduce you to myself and to Marianne Lapham. Welcome to our ongoing series, Exploring Agile Principles and Their Application Across the Department of Defense. In today's installment, we explore the fifth Agile principle, which says, build projects around motivated individuals, give them the environment and the support they need, and trust them to get the job done. But first, a little bit about me and Marianne. Marianne's work focuses on supporting and improving the acquisition of software-intensive systems. For Department of Defense programs, this means assisting and advising on software issues at the system and or segment level. In addition, she leads our research into software topics that are germane to acquisition of software-intensive systems. My research focuses on synthesizing effective technology transition and management practices from research and industry into effective techniques for use of particularly agile and lean methods in regulated settings like the DoD. This is our fifth podcast exploring the real-world application of Agile principles in Department of Defense settings. If you like what you hear today, there are already four podcasts in this series, and we will eventually have 12 podcasts, one for each Agile principle behind the Agile Manifesto. As a reminder, the four values and 12 principles of the Agile Manifesto can be found at www.agilemanifesto.org. We have lots to talk about today, Marianne, don't we?
We do, Suze.
Should we start talking about maybe trust?
Trust. Trust is one of the key components and underlying tenets of doing anything in Agile, because you have to trust your team. You know, you give them a job and you trust them to get it done.
And the team trusts the product owner and the other stakeholders to tell them what they need so that they can develop something correctly.
And trust them not to interfere, quote unquote, with their getting the job done, not overly constrain them with overhead management things, and trust them to work through the process. And the team, on the other hand, provides transparency and openness. And every day they have what we call information radio, something upon the board or even in a tool, so that anybody, any stakeholder, can look at it and see where they're at. So trust on both sides.
So how is that different from our traditional software development and DoD environments?
Well, over the years, as you're probably aware, trust has become...
broken?
Broken, yes. And back in, well, Reagan's day, trust but verify. And that's very much the moniker of today. However, some organizations trust more than others. And in many cases, trust is just not there at all. And in that environment, it would be very difficult to do an agile type of development without a lot of change in, okay, culture in the general environment.
So you and I have both seen some settings where an organization, a development organization, usually a contractor, is trying to use agile principles, and yet at the same time, they're being asked to do at least, if not more, documentation than they had in the past. They're asked for the detailed team metrics, not just the typical management metrics. They're being asked for a lot of information that would make you think they're not very trusted. And in those settings, we've seen not very good success with agile methods. And I would assert that that's actually one of the reasons, is that there isn't a feeling of trust. And so that transparency and that ability to be motivated, because when you're not trusted, it's hard to feel motivated to do your best work. You know, all those things kind of, that's why this principle has all these things together, because it all plays down. I think trust is where a lot of it comes down to.
Well, and not only are you not motivated, but you start to shrink back into your little shell to protect yourself, because you never know when somebody's going to take a pot shot at you. And the one thing I've noticed, it's not just, okay, everybody says, oh, the government's the bad guy here. Well, no, they're not. I mean, they can be the guy that's not trusting, but some of these development teams and the programs themselves on the contractor side, the team itself and their immediate managers are gung-ho and they're going to do this right, but their senior managers aren't necessarily...
Inside their organization.
Inside their own organization doesn't have this trust either because, again, they've been developed and trained in the old system. And this is a different paradigm. We know that. And it does require you to change your way of thinking and step out there in that scary world where, yeah, I'm going to trust them to do their job. Well, maybe not. Well, and it's very difficult. And so not only do these teams have to deal with a customer, government in this case, who may not be familiar with this mode of operation and over the years has been, let's say, burnt a few times by not being...
We've seen some of that.
We've seen some of that. We all have, at least once. But they have to deal with the same kind of trust issues within their own organization because some of the senior managers, one, aren't trained well, think it's a good idea, but don't understand what it means to go that route, and they still expect to see the same old stuff they've always seen and don't realize that you're going to see the same intent, but it won't look the same.
Right. So let's talk about the opposite. You and I have both had exposure to one organization where trust really is prevalent within one of the Air Force projects that we've worked with. And this is a case where the program manager, who is the only government person on the project, is working with four different contractors. They all, I can't tell you who works for which one.
Well, you can't tell.
Because they all work together for the same goal. And you see the trust when they tell her that they need a different tool set or that they need to re-architect or that they need to, whatever it is that they need to do, they have a discussion about it. But it's always starts, the discussions that we've observed always start from the basic belief that they are giving her the best information possible, that they're not trying to just get more money and they're not trying to just, you know, it's a whole different feeling when you observe these kinds of interactions. And, oh, by the way, a different result. This place has got over 700 adoptions, voluntary adoptions of their software throughout the Air Force and other organizations.
Right. And it's not mandatory. It's something that they can choose. It's not a program of record, although they're headed that direction, but I don't think it's got there yet. And they choose to do it, you know, on their own.
Right.
Yeah, I want to adopt this because it's a great program. And it's interesting, the contractors, when you go talk to them, and when we first met them, we kept saying, okay, who do you work for? And they tell you the name of the program. And you go, no, who do you work for?
Who signs your paycheck?
And then you had to get, who signs your paycheck? Oh, that's so-and-so. Well, and then they go, well, yeah, but that's... Their environment was the program and the program culture, and the trust was there. And I've actually run across some other programs in the Navy and the Marines for a couple of other things that I don't think you met these folks, but they have some of that. And the parts of the organization that they had that trust really were working well. And then there were the guys that were a little skeptical, and you could see
the difference,
the tension and the difference and the potential problems if there was no trust there, and the fact that they didn't have the right environment to build that trust. And some of them were heading that direction, and as they got better and better in creating the environment for it, you could see the change. It was so evident when you walked in the room.
And I don't want to assert or you know, tell anybody that this organization got to that point overnight.
Oh, heavens no.
They have been using agile methods for over 9 years now. So this is something that did occur over time, and this is something that happens over time. So let's go back to sort of these other elements. Motivated individuals and providing an environment and support that are needed by the team. Those are the other parts of that principle, and they are actually one of the ways to build trust in my mind, because if you help people become motivated by giving them the right skills, by helping them to understand the mission, by actually believing what they say, unless you have, you know, really good reason not to, You get that motivation. But one of the other ways you get the motivation is if the environment and support is there for them to do their best work, right?
Very true.
And that is one of the things that when I talk to people about this principle, one of the things that as soon as we talk about environment and support, they say, oh, well, we don't have enough money for, you know, big automated test suites and da-da-da-da, and we don't have the money to set aside all this extra space and all the rest of it. I've seen successful teams, you know, take over a conference room for 2 weeks and then give it to the next team. I've seen people use open source, even in the DoD, use open source tools, which are free, that help them get started with automated testing. As a matter of fact, some of my friends in the automated testing sort of domain say the best tools that are out there tend to be the open source tools. So it doesn't always cost management a huge amount to create the environment that the teams are going to need to succeed, but they've got to be willing to ask what's needed and figure out how to provide that support.
Well, that, and they also have to be willing to be the cover, if you will.
The top cover.
The top cover.
Yep.
For the team, so that the folks who are not privy to what's really going on, the guys that sit back and go, those guys over there, they're screwing off because they're having these parties, what looks like parties, but they're not. They're having meetings where the team's animated and putting things on the wall and running around and doing stuff that you would do in a normal agile environment, mm-hmm. which is totally different than your waterfall environments.
Typing in documentation.
And people will look at it and go, something's going on over there. And then they start taking pot shots at the group. But I want to go back to the motivated individual thing. I think most people, you know, every once in a while you run into somebody who's not motivated to do their job, but most people are motivated. But there's also a part of the motivation, it's kind of a corollary to this. You have to, a lot of people, when you're changing from an older environment, the old traditional, to the more agile environment, they may be very, very motivated, but they just cannot work in that more open environment. They just can't change to do that.
They're like they're waiting for somebody to feed them the information.
They just can't do that. And that's fine, but you have to make sure that when you go there and you identify those people, and a lot of times they self-identify and say, I have to find something else to do. I don't want to play this. I can't do this. This is totally anti what I'm expecting, and I just can't make the transition. You need to be able to say, that's fine, and find them a home someplace else so that they're not punish for the organization changing. And that's very hard because sometimes, you know, that's one of the fears. People go, well, where do I fit in this new organization? I don't see anything that says program manager, for instance. So
and testers, you want the testers to be on the team and maybe even code?
Yeah, and work next, actually almost touch this developer. I mean, there's cultural things that come in here. So you have to be aware that motivation has many aspects, and you have to make sure that people have the right mindset.
And another
the right
aspect of motivation is skills.
Yes.
Because I know one of the methods in Agile, in extreme programming, is to do pair programming.
Yes.
And I've seen examples of that turned into a real disaster because you had this very senior developer that knew everything about the system and somebody more junior, and the senior developer felt like they had to continually prove their worth. So the way to do that was to not work productively, not mentor the other person, mm-hmm. but essentially show them up, which is a disaster when you start trying to build trust among the team,
That gets back to the fear factor of where's my job going to be if I tell you everything I know? And historically, that's kind of the one who with the knowledge is the one that's going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
They can't fire me because I know too much.
I'm the only one who knows about this.
Even though it's documented, I only one that knows why it got there and how this happened and that and the other. And we all see that, and we've all been exposed to that. And that's another thing another force you're playing against when you want to go to the Agile environment.
Because it's about the team.
It's about the team. It's not about the individual.
The team needs to succeed at the mission.
Right. And there are no heroes, so to speak. The team's the hero.
Yeah.
Now, there might be somebody that goes, aha, and that breaks the code for whatever needs to be done and that helps the rest of the team get along.
But the next time it'll be somebody else.
It'll be somebody else. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons why some of the places allow the team to decide who gets the bonuses.
Yep, we've seen that.
Yeah, so I mean that's another principle, but still, you know, rewarding your people. But we'll get to that in another.
So when I think about the environment, let's just talk about environment that's needed to support and how it may or may not fit with traditional sort of DoD kinds of environments. One is that from a physical space viewpoint, mm-hmm. when you have a co-located team, which you can't always have, we recognize that, but when you have a co-located team, you want all those people to be able to be working in the same space. So sometimes you need to move them physically into an area, and that can be a problem if you've got people in different functional offices and that are accustomed mm-hmm. to, you know, having facilities deal with
each department individually. And that gets back to how a lot of the DoD personnel, they're allocated to functional groups because that's how they're trained and that's how they're, you know, and that's their career path. That's their career path.
Yep.
And so to violate that, you've almost, on one hand, you've given them a really cool opportunity, but you've violated where they see their career path going.
Which is their success.
And their
as an individual.
Right. And their increased, you know, earnings and their promotions and all that stuff. So that whole part of it has to be considered when you're doing environment. Our environment is not just the technical environment. It's
That's right.
the rest of the environment. And just because they're not, and we know a lot of the teams, you might have one team in one building, one in another, but even worse, in different parts of the country.
Right.
Now, initially, way back when Agile started, that was a real problem. But fast forward 10 years, 12 years now, and there's so much available from a technology standpoint.
Yeah. There's a lot more. Although I still prefer.
I know, face to face, where you can reach out and actually touch the person.
Yeah.
But
and most people do.
And most people do, but you can get around it. You can't get around it. You can't always do it, and you can get around it because you can use Skype and all those VTCs, and some organizations actually have a flat screen on the wall, and it's on all the time, and you need to talk to Joe, and he's in California, and you're in Texas, so you go, hey, Joe, are you there? And Joe pops up and says, what you need? And yes, it's not, we can't reach out, but their face is there, and you know them, because you have had face-to-face meetings with these people. You can't just do it.
You can't build the trust.
Build the trust if they haven't at least had some face-to-face meetings, and that's an expense. Yeah.
So I want to talk a minute about some of the things we've seen that are workarounds, if you will, in terms of trying to build an environment. So there's the one team I talk about that talked about that they kind of had one conference room, and teams would rotate in and out of that conference room depending on, they wouldn't get it all the time, but they would have at least once every three or four cycles, they would have that workspace for their two-week sprint. Another environment just took over. They had people all in the same building, but they couldn't move their cubicle space, you know, because of their facilities restrictions. And they had some empty cubicles. And they got facilities to basically pull the walls out and just create a corral, right? And then they brought in rolling tables and things like that, and they got IT to put the drops in that they needed for the drops. So they kind of used their essentially social capital with them, their friends, to get the workspace. And that allowed them to prove over the course of a release that they could do a lot better this way than if they were just working at their individual terminals. And so that was a pretty innovative session, or a pretty innovative way of doing things. But it did mean that later they had to, grovel before the facility gods and get some things done later. But they at least piloted it. You know, they tried it, and they showed what the environment change could do. And that was important.
And that's one of the things. Trust them to get the job done. You told them, it would be better if you guys, and they'll figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Do they have to figure out how to get all in one space? Do they have to figure out how to solve some technical problem? If you give people a challenge and give them the boundaries and say, go figure it out.
And it's a reasonable one.
It's not
a death march.
Yeah, it's not a death march. Most people will rise to the occasion, and some of the stuff they come up with is totally amazing.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to put a plug in right now for our blog series, because one of the things that we're talking about in our Agile blog series is the kinds of indicators that help you to understand if you have an organizational or a project or team environment that is going to be conducive to Agile. So if you are interested in that, this environmental discussion, we do already have some blogs posted that start dealing with this, and we will have some more coming up.
Right. So. And the keywords there are readiness and fit
about. Oh, yeah, in terms of the blog, look for readiness and fit.
Look for readiness and fit.
I happen to be the author, so
So she keeps forgetting to tell everybody. It's readiness and fit. And if you looked at it and didn't have a clue what it means, now you know.
Anything else on this topic that you think we should cover? I mean, I could talk for days on this.
We can. We could talk for days on any of these.
People an idea that the environment and the trust are key elements of making an Agile transition.
Yeah.
And if you don't have it already, you've got to find ways to build it.
And it's trust not just between the contractor and the government, but trust within the government side. We didn't talk much
within
about
the
that
other stakeholders.
And within the other stakeholders and even within a contractor company across the board there, you have to have trust up, down, sideways.
And sideways.
All over. And if you do, you're going to have much better chance of success.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean you'll be totally successful, but certainly a better chance.
Yep.
Because it takes work.
All right. Marianne, thanks for joining me today.
You're welcome.
In the next episode in this series, we will explore the sixth Agile principle, which we've sort of brought in a little bit of in this discussion. which says the most efficient and effective method of conveying information to and within a development team is face-to-face conversation. We did kind of preview that.
Yeah, we did.
And we do know that's a challenge in today's geographically distributed environment, but we'll talk some more about that next time. Listings for papers, blog posts, and podcasts related to our research on agile adoption in DoD can be found at sei.cmu.edu/acquisition/research. If you'd like more information about the SEI's recent publications in all areas of our work, you can download all of our technical reports and notes at sei.cmu.edu/library/reports-papers, that's all one word, .cfm. This podcast is available on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts and on Carnegie Mellon University's iTunes U site. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you.